It's Thursday, September 3rd. It's Monday, September 3rd, and you're listening to the Geek at Geek News Central, show number 796, sponsored in part by GoDaddy.com. Our September special for all new and existing GoDaddy customers, get up to 3.coms at $4.99 each. Use promo code 499GEEK. Hey, everyone, I got a great show lined up for you tonight. Yes, it's coming off a Labor Day weekend, but lots of content. Believe it or not, so you know what comes next. Strap in. Here it comes.
All right, people, I need a go, no-go for the Geek News Central podcast. Digital archive recorders.
We're go fly.
Microphone.
We're go fly.
Video feed.
Go.
Web browser.
Go.
RSS data stream aggregator.
Go fly.
Interflux Toddism suppressor.
All right, I'm confused.
Host readiness check.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
The Geek News Central Podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to go. Cue Todd in...
5.
Button, who's got the button?
4.
There is no cause for alarm.
3.
Everybody hold on to something.
2.
Just press the button.
1.
It's showtime.
Aloha and welcome to Geek News Central, coming to you as live as it can be from the beautiful state of Hawaii via the Geek News Central studio overlooking Greater Honolulu. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. Of course, my name is Todd Cochran, and I want to encourage you to get over to geeknewscentral.com and check out all our great content. Of course, it's real easy to get hooked up with the show. All you got to do is go over to Geek News Central, and you'll find on that website, you'll find a place there where you can get subscribed to the show. You'll find information on how to get hooked up with our newsletter. And really, that's what it's all about, making sure that you stay connected with a podcast at all times, and the newsletter allows you to do that because I'll be sending out all the show notes directly following the show today to everyone on the newsletter. Of course, if you're not subscribed to the newsletter, you can get all the show notes at gncshownotes.com. It's got all the links to all the articles that I'm going to cover tonight on the show. And of course, we've always got lots of links and information up on the website as well. Of course, we want you to check out the Tech Podcast channel on the Roku, Boxy, Samsung Smart TV, Google TV. These are all locations where you can watch the show post-show via a nice kickback solution where you're sitting in your Easy Boy and using your set-top box to check the show out. And of course, we're available on 100-plus devices. Plus, you can just come over to the website and click play. You can do that as well. Well, as always, you can contact me on Twitter real easy. All you got to do is reach out at Geek News is the Twitter account. You can email me here, geeknews@gmail.com, or you can call the voicemail hotline available 24 hours a day at 619-342-7365. Well, I made a little bit of a mistake when I started the show today because the promo is $599.coms. Excuse me, $599.coms versus $499.coms. Got a little excited right off the very get-go tonight. So you can get up to 3 domains at $599 each. And then you can pick up the additional ones via using my promo codes over at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. But we want to thank GoDaddy for being a sponsor here. And I tell you that last time we ran this .com special, it was really popular because people were able to save some money on some .coms. And that's long-term savings. It really helps you out. Now, if you're looking for additional codes, don't forget to check all out, again, all my promo codes at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. We've got 20% savings on 1 year shared hosting accounts. We've got 15% off any order, $20 or more. We've got $799.coms when they're basically, if you pick more than 3.coms over the $599 special, that's what you're gonna pay for them. Full $2 off on each domain. And of course, .com renewals using ComSale 3. So a whole list of codes that you can use there at geeknewscentral.com. And we want you definitely to check, again, everything out at GoDaddy. We appreciate them being a sponsor here. And, set up a domain, start a new website, start a new venture. And that's what it's all about getting involved in the online world. And we want you to own your own .com and make sure that you have your own point of presence. One thing I did is I bought domain names for all my kids. So I've got all my kids' domain names reserved. That was important to me from right off the bat. Whether they use them or not, I don't know, but it's invested. They can have them when they're ready for them because it's not easy it's not easy getting dot-coms these days that have, just a single last name. So you'd be able to hopefully pick up some with your kid's first and last name in them and give them to them if they want. Well, let's talk just a little bit about what's been going on here this past, Monday. Sunday, we went out to the, what's known here in Honolulu as the Okinawan Festival, where my wife is originally from Okinawa. So we try to go out every year, and it gives the kids some cultural immersion beyond what they get when they do go back to Japan and visit the family. But they do everything you would expect. They do all the crafts. They do the traditional stuff, the traditional music, traditional dancing. And I get to see all that. Plus, get to sample some of the grind, some of the food that we normally don't necessarily cook here, but is available always at those types of events. So it was a good afternoon. Got a little bit of sun. My bottoms or tops of my feet are sunburned where I missed the sunscreen. It's not good. So I'm a little bit tender on the tops of my feet today. Other than that, not too bad for wear for being out in the sun all day yesterday. But we're fast moving here to be on having a good week so I can get ready to head out to Texas this coming Saturday night. So there will be a Saturday morning tech at the end of the week like we normally do. Of course, we had one this past Saturday, and I hope you guys checked out. We had a lot of people that showed up this past Saturday for that. And it really was a great discussion because we talked about tablets, talked about everything that's going on in tech. I talked about the new tech TC40, the new TriCaster 40, which is just absolutely amazing for the price. And I guess we spent about an hour and 40 minutes chatting. All that content is up online. Of course, we had Jeffrey Powers from Geekazine on board and Rob Greenlee as well. He was on with the show for us. And it was a nice chat. So we'll have something lined up for you next Saturday. But definitely, if you're not subscribed to Saturday Morning Tech, make sure you do so and go ahead and get hooked up with it. What else is going on? We're still looking for podcast awards reviewers. If you're part of the Ohana here, part of the listeners of this show, you guys get a special treat every year. If you want to help us out, you can. By basically volunteering to be a reviewer for all the nominations, you get a couple of categories to review. It does take a couple of hours per category, so just be advised that you will need a couple of hours to look at each category. We will only load you up with two, but basically what it is we have to have independent reviews of each category that's been nominated. And really what I'm looking for is 44 folks from this show, they're willing to do the reviews and help us move forward with the 8th annual podcast awards. And I'm excited about being able to launch that on October 1st, open it up for nominations. We'll have a announcement a little bit later in the week, probably Wednesday, I'm thinking. So I got to get with the team that I'm going to be talking to basically about the announcement tomorrow, and we'll get something written up and online. So lots going on this week. Going to be very, very busy. But we have two shows for you, obviously, this week. We have one on Thursday. Actually, three shows. This show, the Thursday show, and, of course, this coming Saturday. And then off to Texas and two shows on the road. And, boy, I'm not looking forward to going back to the heat of Texas again. But it's part of a little contract deal that I've got set up. So it's going to be good for good for the home, good for the bank book, and so I'll be heading out. All right, let me go ahead and look at my stack here and see what I have, if I've got anything else. I didn't switch it over tonight. I should have. The audio stream has not been switched over. Maybe I'll find a spot here a little bit later in the show to be able to do that, but we're up on the live video stream on Amazon tonight, as always. And that actually brings up a point that I want to talk about here. And let me see if I can find the link. And what it involves is this past weekend. Let's see, I might bring this up. This past weekend, there was a award event. It's called the Hugo Awards. And this was done at the WorldCon event, which thousands of people tune into via streaming video service Ustream. And what happened was that the Ustream feed was cut off just as a gentleman by the name of Neil Gaiman was giving an acceptance speech for his Doctor Who script. The doctor's wife, where Gaiman's face had been where the words, anyway, WorldCon had banned this due to copyright infringement, and basically the site got taken down. Some automated bot at Ustream. What ended up happening was that this guy had just gotten an award for the Doctor Who script, and before he took the stage, the Hugo Awards showed clips from his winning episodes, along with clips from some Doctor Who episodes that had been nominated, as well as a community episode. Now, Macworld editorial director Jason Snell said that Ustream just shut down the Hugo live stream because they showed those clips of the TV nominees, even though the Hugo Awards had permissions from the studios and actually had gotten the clips from the studios themselves to use during the award ceremony. So here you are, you're live streaming, you're up online, they show a video clip that had been provided by the studio, and some robot at Ustream said, oh, that's infringing, and locked them out and shut down the broadcast due to this digital rights management robot on Ustream not knowing that they had gotten permission, automatically assumed that they had been basically violating copyright. And boy, there's a lot of people that are pissed. And there is call-outs on Twitter, Reddit, on the official Worldcon Twitter announcement. There was an apology. Ustream has came back and he's made a public apology about the incident, but their explanation was a little odd. He says that Ustream will no longer be using Vobile, which is a third-party service that does automated infringement takedowns. And the odd part is that apparently Ustream couldn't restart its own live feed once Vobile had shut it down. At least that's what CEO Brad Huntstable is claiming. And he wrote on the Ustream blog that the channel was automatically banned in the middle of an acceptance speech by author Neil Gaiman due to a copyright infringement. This occurred because a third-party automated infringement system, Vobile, detected content in the stream that it deemed to be copyrighted. Vobile is a system that rights holders upload their content for review on many video sites around the web. The video clips shown prior to Neil's speech automatically triggered the third-party system at the behest of the copyright holder. He says, our editorial team and content monitors almost immediately noticed a flood of livid Twitter messages about the ban and attempted to restore the broadcast. Unfortunately, they're not able to lift the ban before the broadcast ended. He said, we had many unhappy viewers as a result, and for that, he's truly sorry. As a background, our system works like this. In order to support a large volume of broadcastings or using a free platform, users of our paid ad-free pro broadcasting service are automatically whitelisted to avoid situations like this and receive hands-on client support. He says, I've suspended the use of third-party system until we're able to recalibrate the settings so that we can better balance the needs of broadcasters, viewers, and copyright holders. While we are committed to protecting copyright, we absolutely must ensure our amazing and democratizing platforms allows legal broadcasts. Now, here's the thing that's is the issue. You guys know that as part of this show, I rebroadcast later on Ustream. And I have become so paranoid about running any video clips in the show from YouTube or anywhere because these beep, beep, beep robots are brain dead. And immediately, if you have something in your content and you're going along and you're going to talk about a news story, and you're going to give attribution, you're going to give links in the show notes to them, it doesn't matter. As soon as you show that video, the robots say you have infringed. There's no such thing anymore about quote-unquote fair use. So this is one of the reasons why this show is primarily streamed on a server I control. I pay the bandwidth for. And believe me, on a monthly basis, that is a bill I would rather not have to pay. I'd rather allow Ustream to pick up the feed. I'd allow Livestream to pick up the frame as a primary feed. But I just cannot risk having this show taken down because I'm doing reporting on what's going on the web and running any video clips. So, you know, it goes beyond that. We've talked about it in the past on the show where if I play a video clip, 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 seconds of something, which the news networks do all the time, and then I put that video up on the internet, boom, the video will be flagged and be taken down by YouTube. And all they need is a number of copyright hits, and they reduce your access to your account. They lock you out. And this is just ongoing pure crap on what's going on with these automated robots. So what happens when I get ready to do the 8th Annual Podcast Awards, and we're going to live stream that event, we always do. You know, what happens when we're showing clips from people's content? If we show that and we're on Ustream, we're going to get, you know, and they're using a service like this that's being referred to in this article. We'll be shut down. And in the last two years, I've used Amazon because I wasn't happy because Ustream was never able to scale and support everyone that we had on the feed. You know, the first time they crashed, the first year we used Ustream, we got to about 13,000 viewers and they died. Of course, it's a stream that's not used very often. It's used once a year. And when it does, I give them heads up, tell them it's coming. But they went and they never really made sure they had enough servers on tap to take care of it. So we switched to Amazon. We use their biggest instant. We use CloudFront as part of their distribution, just like we do on this show right now. And largely, I have no issues. I don't have any interruption with advertising that they're shoving into the stream. And, you know, but it's pretty sad here that Ustream could not even control its own technology, that it got locked out of their own system. So I'm sure this is going to be an ongoing discussion. This is all over the web. People are talking about it, and it's just by, you know, I've seen it here. So, you know, I've tried to put as much faith in that Amazon is not going to come in and pull my feed because we're showing a 30-second video clip. But it doesn't negate the other issues post-show where I'm off of live and I go to publishing status and I drop something up on YouTube or put it somewhere and they say, oh my God, you've infringed this company's copyright. You know, and you're giving them a link, you're giving them kudos, you're talking about it, you know, you're driving traffic to them and they're going to go in and cut you? And I just... it's insane. It is. You guys see I'm frustrated? but not a good night for this company. You know, they're getting their name out there, Vobel. And I'm sure they'll have some discussions with them tomorrow if they haven't already. So, you know, the sci-fi fans have blown their stack over this. And, you know, the Register says Ustream is rain on the science fiction's world's big event with its copyright enforcement bots unplugging the Hugo Awards for showing winner clips. And, you know, here we are talking about it. I'd heard about it this morning. I'd gotten emails from several of you had sent in links and said, Todd, you need to talk about this. But just incredible. You know, it's not going to be long before I'm not even going to be able to show a screen up on the website here, up on the live stream. So I'm going to show you guys something. So, you know, it's just like flipping this website in. It won't be too long before they're going to be, you know, pounding us for copyright violation for that. So let me talk about another big screw up that happened over the past few days. And boy, Samsung has gotten themselves some serious egg on their face in a big way. And this is an interesting story. And this shows you a lot about what's going on in the promotion and reporting area. The IFA is an event that happens in Berlin. And as much as I would like to go to that show, it just cost-wise can't do it, let alone take a crew and take cameras and take everything needed to cover that event. It just costs too much money. Well, imagine, you know, here we are in a situation where we can cover CES and other events like that. But imagine if you are in India, or if you are in a country where, you know, these folks don't make very much money that are doing writing on technology. So apparently Samsung has this program called Mobilers, M-O-B-I-L-E-R-S. So they had a contest. They were going to take two Indian bloggers to IFA Berlin. And as part of the contest, they were asked initially if they're going to be reporters or if they wanted to be being promoting. And both of them had replied back, said, hey, we want to be reporters, we're bloggers, we want to cover on this. And this was going to come with their airfare, their hotels, they're going to get backstage access to the early announcements, you know, all the stuff that happens what reporters get access to. So apparently a few days before they're getting ready to leave, the person that was arranging it in India had said, hey, we got to have you go as promoters. You're only going to ask to do a couple of extra things. Well, that ended up being a much bigger issue. It appears that if you're a reporter, you're invited as a reporter. You'll always be invited to the product launch events. But if you're promoter, in other words, you're there promoting, you're going to you are going to work with Samsung during IFA. For a short period, it would be handling the booths, showcasing the devices to the visitors. You're going to be given all the perks along with a uniform that you have to wear as part of the event to show that you're part of the staff. So in other words, they're getting really free help by these people on this Mobileers program. Well, they got there and they're like, hey, we were being told we can't go to our pre-show events. We have to stay in the booth for 12 hours a day. This is not what we signed up for. You know, the deal was made that we were supposed to be there covering and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So long story short, Samsung, who has gotten a lot of, and here's what ended up happening. After these guys started complaining and they got on the phone, Samsung says, hey, listen, you don't play ball. We're not going to pay for your ticket going home. And basically like, huh, you're going to strand us here in Berlin? And so Samsung sent an official statement over this. And this was a huge, it's been all over the net today. Samsung Mobileers is a volunteer community of active Samsung mobile device users who are offered the opportunity to participate in our marketing events across the world. At these events, all activities they undertake are on a voluntary basis. No activities are forced upon them. Number two, we regret that this was a misunderstanding between Samsung Mobileer coordinators and the relevant bloggers, as we understand he was not sufficiently briefed on the nature of Samsung Mobileer's activities at IFA 2012. We have been attempting to get in touch with him. We respect the independence of bloggers to publish their own stories. They go on to say, clearly a case of miscommunication. The whole event was blown out of proportion all over social media. The whole ordeal with Clinton would have been a major... So in other words, there was two sides to this story. Now, there was more to this. And there was more to this email that they didn't put on the web. So what ended up happening? Nokia came in, picked up the hotel, and picked up the return travel for these two bloggers so they could get back to India. Now, someone at Samsung needs to be fired. They blew it. But this is incredible. If you think about this, they're flying in bloggers from different countries to basically blog about the products for their Indian audience or whatever country they're from. But yet, Samsung wanted them to be promoters working like as if they were paid staff in their booth talking to customers that were coming in and wanted information on the phones. To me, this is incredible. And I'm sure there's more to this story than what we've seen already. But it's obviously Samsung has got some fixing to do in their program. Now, we've been asked in the past, and we've accepted. We've taken airfare and hotel arrangements to go out to Ford events. We have disclosed that we're, you know, basically flown out and basically fed and housed to look at Ford products. We've done that at this and from Geek News Central for several years now. We disclosed that that trip is being paid for and right in our coverage. And, it's a whole different story to be, really, maybe not, but it's a whole, you know, you think about being flying from India to Berlin, you know, that had to be a pricey ticket, staying in Berlin and the per diem and everything that's going on, especially for a week or however long they were going to be there. It's pretty incredible, but, Samsung is definitely needs to get, a better PR up and PR rep in India. And this one was pretty shady on what they did and what transpired, but, another hit in the face to Samsung here, over what has happened to IFA and their coverage. But, it is pretty, pretty impressive that this happened. And this guy's individual, Karan Bajaj.in. It was on Gizmodo. It was on the over at thenextweb.com. And so anyway, long story short. Oh, here was the piece that there was a piece that was missing here. Oh, maybe not. Yeah, so there's another email out there that shows some additional stuff that Samsung basically, you know, they didn't, what they said to the press and to the people that have been blogging wasn't necessarily what was always in the email. So anyway, I have the link up in the show notes. You can check it out. But wow, say they're not going to fly them home and leave them stranded. And Nokia picked up the tab. It makes you go, in a big, big, big way. All right, here, Amazon, Motorola, Nokia. Boy, they're going to be all battling Apple with tech announcements. You know, you better buckle your seatbelt here because the first week in September is going to be wild. You know, with Apple going to be releasing their iPhone on September 12th, we've got announcements coming fast and furious on September 5th. Nokia and Microsoft is scheduled an event in New York. So that's a big one. Motorola's got a announcement. On September 5th, also calling the day's main event. So Motorola is expected to introduce some new products. We've got Amazon on September 6th. So big week here of news announcements that are all going to be around the mobile network and tablets and so forth. So this is huge. But what it is all these companies are trying to get their announcements out before the big ground swoop of Apple news. Of course, the ground swoop of Apple news is kind of being laughed at right now because the new iPhone 5 release date and feature roundup is getting pretty public. There's lots of information out there. There's a very, very good video that talks about a new iPhone 5, shows you the actual phone. It's pretty convincing. If it's not the real deal, then I would be very surprised. So it's not going as well for Apple and having to have as much secrecy on their event. And so, you know, you got all kinds of people that are reporting on different stuff and stuff that's been leaked out. So, you know, they're doubling down. Tim Cook's doubling down on secrecy has really been super effective. So it should be a fun couple of weeks here as we watch all the announcements. There's a article over on Ars talking about developers, specifically mobile app developers, taking a stand against pay-to-review app sites. And apparently this is big, big, big money. It turns out that there's a lot of sites out there that are charging developers anywhere between $29 and $150 for a view of their app. And they're pretty brazen about how they work. If you go to iPhone App Review or Best 10 Apps, they have a section of coverage basically talks about the packages that a developer can choose from, ranging from a simple text review to link building services designed to improve SEO. Other sites like AppCraver and Tapscape are a little less blatant, calling their scheme an expedited review. And so essentially what's going on here is that it's pay to play. And if you have a big budget, you can have a lot of reviews. And you can almost be guaranteed if you're paying for reviews on a app review site, you're going to get what you paid for. Positive reviews from, paid reviewers. So, with competition so stiff to be able to break out an app, it's just like, this show. We ask you guys to do reviews on the show on iTunes, on Zoom, and wherever else you can submit a review. We ask you to do that. And asking you to do that and having you do that usually ends up being two different things. I maybe get one response or two responses, because people are busy and they don't have time to get onto iTunes. And it's just, it's a hassle. But when you pay someone to do that, they've got a financial incentive to go out and write reviews for a new app. So not surprising here that this is going on, but pretty good review on really the ecosystem that is happening on app reviewers. All right, if you're getting ready to go off the grid, and if you're looking to figure out what type of tech to take with you as you're going on, let's say you're going on safari, or you're going to be biking across Europe and you're not going to have real good connectivity, there's a pretty good article on Ars talking about a number of different devices that you can have. Number one item they reviewed is a backpack that has solar panels on it. And that's a $350 item. And it sports a pair of 2-watt solar panels, which the company says are waterproof, lightweight, and built to withstand abuse. They can output 6 to 12 volts. And basically, they'll actually charge something in about 5 hours. So if you have a phone that needs to get a charge, you can get a charge in about 5 hours on that. The backpack also built in and a removable battery that can store up to 3,000 milliamp hours of power from solar panels. So that's pretty cool. And that's, of course, an upcharge on that. And it's similar to like the Mophie Juice Pack that's out there that's available. There's one that I use as well. And then they go into different types of products like a Belkin Mini Surge Protector, a dual USB charger. They talk about a Lacy 8-gig drive. They talk about a Lumen Aid Light. It's a solar-powered lantern about the size of a small pillow. And can give you enough light to help you out overnight. And they talk about using a variety of different phones, one being the Nokia 1202. It's a low-end mobile phone, which basically is can be used in a lot of foreign countries. And then talking about entertainment devices, different types of products and services. And but anyway, this is a nice little write-up. So if you're getting ready to go backpacking across Europe, or if you're going on safari, these might be some phones and some tech gear that you may want to add to your pack out so that you can semi-stay connected and some of the cool stuff you'll be able to do when you're mobile. Good luck having a solar tower if you're going on safari. I recommend those devices that you can send a SOS message from a satellite. Those always work good. Hey, over on Universe Today, they've got a good write-up. It's sharing memories of Neil Armstrong. It's a photo gallery and shows a bunch of the discussions he was in, some pictures and stuff. So I have a link up in the show notes for you to check out on that. Well, Samsung also announced the Galaxy camera at IFA. And this is kind of an interesting development here because this Galaxy camera is running on Android. It's basically a point and shoot, and it's a pretty impressive little camera. And they basically loaded it up with software that makes publishing your media to a variety of different services real simple. So really, what you've got is you've got all the features of a point and shoot digital camera, but you also have the the inclusion of Instagram on the device. You can push to YouTube. You can push to a variety of different sites as well. It's got the Wi-Fi connection, obviously. That's really important. Ability to live blog and really do a whole bunch of stuff. So I'm sure we're going to see a few people rocking these at CES and in Vegas. I'm definitely going to be looking into getting one, especially if it makes it real easy to get photos up on the fly. I think that'll be awesome to be able to push stuff, just, you know, click and the picture goes. Many times we're uploading photos at the end of the day, and that kind of sucks, but it'd be pretty nice to have this camera. It's a 16 megapixel camera, so it's not at all chintzing on the actual photo. It's got a telephoto lens that's collapsing. So pretty nice phone, camera, excuse me. But it's running Android. And it looks just like a regular point and shoot. Let me give you guys a little close look here of this. And you can just check it out. This was over on androidcentral.com. So if you want a quick look, you can go over there and take a peek now. But this is nice, and this is one of the cool things that came out of IFA. Hey, if you're an Android user and you fly United Airlines, they've got an Android app now. So that is basically on the Google Play site. So definitely go over there and grab that. So it's a function over form. But the app works really well. I've had good luck with my iPhone app for United. It's real slick. It tells me where I'm seated, when I get my upgrades, if an airplane's late. These airline apps are always great to have on board and to have with you at all times. Well, the Hisense Pulse Google TV set-top box has gotten some mixed reviews. Some people have had some hands-on time with it. We talked a little bit about it last week, and of course, it's going to be the $99 Google TV. And I tell you, that makes a lot of sense. Of course, it was officially unveiled at IFA last week, and the Hisense folks were on hand to demonstrate it. So they're saying in terms of hardware, the Pulse is a rather unassuming black box to look at. It's relatively small, though, and should fade into a front room setup with very little effort. The expected ports are all present, a solitary USB port on one side of the box with HDMI, Ethernet, and power sockets all on the rear. Also be found in the rear is a connector for an IR blaster, which is cool. The remote is not as impressive. It does offer a full QWERTY keyboard with rubber keys. They say that typing isn't too difficult. The keys just feel like a regular old TV remote. And there seems to be ample space between the keys to avoid hitting the wrong ones. And there's a bevy of controls on the front side of it as well. But they did a quick look at the performance of the device and highlight similar issues reported from early purchases of the Vizio CoStar. Basically a little bit underpowered, seemed a little bit slow to respond. But again, this is a $99 price tag on this. And let me see if I can show you guys some more pictures here. Again, real small form factor, as you would expect, and typical Google TV view. And the remote, I have to say the remote looks a little clunky, but for $99, one cannot complain for sure. But I think this is fantastic. This is going to really help move Google TV ahead and help them compete with Roku. I think Google TV's in this for the long haul. So we'll see where this leads, but pretty nice little set-top box, and I'll definitely be picking one up. Hey, there was a rumor today that Bruce Willis was going to sue iTunes because he was not going to be allowed to pass his Apple Media to his heirs. His wife came on Twitter and basically said no. Bruce is not going to be suing iTunes. This is not a true story. So no celebrity to take up the cause of making sure that you're going to be able to pass down your iTunes library to a loved one. Let me take a shot of water here. Well, you know, over the past 6 or 7 years, we've had this ongoing battle with people putting videos up on where they have their baby dancing to some music in the background where these videos have gotten taken down due to copyright violation. But in some countries, the tide is turning. For many politicians, property rights for media moguls are taking second place to attempts to boost growth by making life easier for technology companies and ordinary users like us. So Canada has passed a law in June that set a new standard of basically permissiveness. It caps statutory damage if copyright is breached for non-commercial purposes. It expands the definition of fair dealing, which is basically the same word for fair use in America. It creates exemptions for educational purposes and for parody, and firms must pass warnings about infringement to the person who posted the material rather than basically issue a takedown notice with the provider. Britain also has tunes and plans internet-friendly legislation this autumn after a review done by a professor of digital economy at Cardiff University. As with the Canada law, the recommended new code entails exemptions for non-commercial use and user-generated content. Also, mooted is a digital copyright exchange that would establish a marketplace for copyright. A musician could list his or her song in the licensing terms. A filmmaker wanting to use it would know how quickly and simply and what to do. So again, those are what's going on in the UK and in Canada. But the EU officials, which will probably conflict with local country issues, want to maintain rules whereby computer users pay a small tithe on digital products to collection societies. And these fees are supposedly meant to go to the content creators. But no word what's going on here in the United States. Now, Ireland and Australia are considering exemptions at all as well that would allow content legally obtained on one device to be accessed on another, called format shifting. And again, without such a provision, cloud computing and digital storage companies could really be accused of betting infringement. So Netherlands, South Korea, and India are all reviewing their rules. But here in the good old United States, we don't have any fair use anymore. But it is very good to see that other countries are starting to make moves on this. So it's an article over on The Economist. And, of course, I heard they had a podcast, too. So I have never subscribed to that, but I heard they had one. Well, Congress members are questioning Homeland Security on some domains they've been seizing without sufficient due process and transparency. This should not come as a surprise that finally the Congress has approached the Department of Homeland Security in regards to domains that have been seized in a letter directed to Attorney General Holder and Secretary Napotona. I can never pronounce her name. Napotona. My God, I'm destroying it. Anyway, you know what I'm talking about. The members question, and that's a Toddism for you. The members question Homeland Security procedures and jurisdiction that is taken to bring down sites, and they may be violating copyright law. So, and specifically talking about the case involving the hip hop website, the Jaws One, which was taken down by DOHS. It has basically been out of their hands for a long time until it's been released back. But anyway, Congress wants some answers. We'll see what they respond and see if we can get any reporting on that as time goes on. Well, Pirate Bay co-founder Gottfried Savaltom Worg has been arrested in Cambodia. He's being held in a Phnom Penh prison after an international warrant was issued against him in April by his native country, Sweden. And Sweden acted after he failed to show up for the start of his one-year jail term for copyright violations. And his arrest was made at the request of the Swedish government for a crime related to information technology. Now, here's the interesting part. The very day he was arrested, the Obama administration's ambassador in Cambodia, Obama ambassador in Cambodia on day Pirate Bay founder was arrested. So, apparently, you would think that the ambassador would be there at all times, but they're suggesting that some special envoy was in town, and this may have been part of the reason that he was, I guess, Ambassador Kirk and Cambodian Minister of Commerce announced today that the United States and Cambodia have agreed to begin exploratory discussions on potentially bilateral investment treaty. So during the meeting, Kirk reportedly reiterated the administration's intention to deepen and strengthen trade and investment. And he says, while the digital economy was a prime topic of the discussions at the ASEAN meeting early in the week, the minister had been discussing the issue of copyright infringement in much more detail. So there may have been something tied there with an administration official being in Cambodia. But you would think the ambassador to Cambodia would always be there. But maybe this, again, this was a, let me make sure I got this right here. Oh, it was a trade ambassador. So it wasn't the actual ambassador to Cambodia, but it was a trade ambassador was in town that very day. So coincidence, I don't know. We'll see. But anyway, he's in jail, and Sweden has asked for his extradition to back out of Cambodia to Sweden. So we'll see where this leads. But this guy's locked up, getting ready to do his time. Pirate Party has been basically the Pirate Party Pirate Bay proxy. I guess that's a mouthful. Pirate Party Pirate Bay proxy has been fighting back after denial of service attacks. One of the world's leading Pirate Bay proxy sites has been battling a crippling denial of service attack this week. Since past Wednesday, the reverse proxy service operated by the UK Pirate Party has been under assault, rendering the service inaccessible to many of its users. The site they aim to facilitate access to, the Pirate Bay itself, has also been under attack. Both sites are fighting back and determined to come out on top. So what's going on here is DDoS going on against both the proxy and the website. No claim of who's doing it, but they suspect maybe Anonymous or someone else. But anyway, so if you've been trying to use the proxy to get to Pirate Bay, especially in the UK, where they're supposed to be blocking all the IPs, that may be the reason why. Now, a real interesting research that's been carried out, and these are all articles. Those two articles were at torrentfreak.com. Researchers are exposing locations of Pirate Bay uploaders. I didn't know this was possible, but I guess they've been doing a bunch of detail analysis here, and they've made determinations where the top uploaders are coming from. And not only that, they've got the top seeder information by IP, and they can look at a specific movie or piece of software, and they know exactly where it's come from. And here's the top ISPs. Number one is Comcast. They've got a number of uploaders were 800. Roadrunner followed 655. Verizon Internet Service 371. Shaw Communications 320. SB Internet Services 317. So in the top five, we had four of the top five ISPs were actually doing the uploads. But it appears that the UK and the United States are running neck and neck in the number of folks that are uploading content. But they've got some pretty interesting stats here. And they're not releasing the IP data, luckily. So those folks are out there uploading stuff are at this time safe, at least from this information. But they're saying, hey, this is easily accessible information. And they say that there's, in some cases, there are hundreds of IPs associated with a single user, but these are also accounts that are linked to a single or very few IP addresses, which is kind of weird. That's a statement that doesn't make a lot of sense. But the top countries that have been submitting are the United States. Canada comes in second. Netherlands, Australia, Great Britain, Sweden, Spain, Norway, France, and Brazil complete the top 10. And again, Comcast is the king when it comes to the number of folks that are uploading content to BitTorrent sites. Moving topics here, there's three hidden features in Firefox 15 you may want to enable. And this is a little bit of messing with a configuration file, but they've got the ability to, number one, enable a native PDF reader, which is pretty cool. They've got the ability to go in and set some advanced preferences for the way the content is displayed. And they've also got some ability to actually disable Flash, which is interesting because if you want your sites to run faster or your web browser run faster, disable Flash, and hopefully the site has HTML5. So anyway, some cool features that you can enable, disable with Firefox 15 that are not widely publicized, but it'll show you how to do it in this specific article. Samsung has finished their initial Chinese factory audits, and they plan long-term solutions to labor woes. And basically what they're coming out and saying is that Samsung did not identify any underage working during the site audit at HEG Electronics in Huzhou, but they identified workers under the age of 18 on site. Those workers are over the age of 16 and are student workers or interns. Yeah, right. Interns at 16, 17, 18. And their presence is legal. The audit identified instances of inadequate management and potential unsafe practices. They did find some overtime issues. They found some safety stuff, including on-site medical clinic issues. They've got some issues with the working conditions, so they've asked HEG to improve on. But it looks like Samsung's being pretty transparent about announcing what they found. So, but that comes from Samsung directly, not a third party agency. So I'm sure anything that was an issue is probably been downplayed as much as possible in this article. All right. Switching up gears here. Are you into basically, looking at the stars? You got 20 grand laying around. How about $20,000 for your own backyard observatory? Well, I'm not kidding. This guy put together his own really amazing telescope with amazing tracking skills. And he's got a lot of money tied up into his hobby. But wait till you see what this 20 grand has been able for him to accomplish. Here's some of his images. Horsehead Nebula in Orion. Cone Nebula in Monoceros. Drumbell Nebula in Vulpecula, Globular Cluster M3 in Keynes Ventaki, Great Globular Cluster in Hercules, Galaxy M81 and M82 in Ursa Major, Great Nebula in Orion. So all these these are some great pictures done by, I didn't know a $20,000 backyard satellite would be able to accomplish this. This to me is like, wow, I'm impressed. I really am. I just did not know that a 20K setup would be able to record such incredible images. I'm not going to run out and build one of these, but you got to give this guy kudos, man. He built it for his kids. I'm sure the father uses it a lot more than the kids do, but it's really awesome. All right, I want to talk about an article that I posted up on Geek News Central today. And this started this morning with some emails I got from some people that were concerned in the podcasting space, including some things that were put on Facebook almost at the same time. But it seems that the folks over at FeedBlitz, and this is a FeedBurner copycat, I guess for better words, and in my opinion, they're using scare tactics in a recent blog post to try to get people to abandon FeedBurner and switch their service. Now, you guys know I've never been a big fan of FeedBurner. I've always questioned why bloggers, podcasters, and anyone else on the net would trust a third party with one of the most valuable digital web assets, which is their RSS feed. Now, it is true that there's been a couple of things that have happened. FeedBurner.jp domain was abandoned. FeedBurner blog shut down by Google. FeedBurner Twitter feed abandoned. But, you know, back in 2005, I was questioning why people were using for FeedBurner to begin with. Now, right now, personally, I don't think that FeedBurner is shutting down. But I've always told people that are on FeedBurner, you should have a contingency plan. They've done nothing to improve the service in 2 years. And I've got a real strong statement to say. And those of you that have been listening to this show for any amount of time knows my thoughts on FeedBurner. And here's what I really have to say. If you were ignorant enough to use FeedBurner in the first place, don't be foolish and switch to a service that is crying wolf and suggesting FeedBurner is going away. Here are the facts. Modern browsers handle RSS feeds fine. Blogging platforms have been creating valid RSS feeds way before FeedBurner came on the market. There's no reason to entrust your most valuable asset to a third party, ever. And the only person that you should trust with your RSS feed is you. As you guys know, Geek News Central has for years had the same RSS feed. You want to subscribe to the blog, geeknewscentral.com/index.xml. You want to subscribe to the podcast, geeknewscentral.com/podcast.xml. And as I stated on my blog, I control my brand. Do you? So don't be worried about what this feed blitz folks are saying, you know, and be very careful about jumping on someone else's service. But be very aware that using FeedBurner comes with some risk. And I'm sure if Google decides that they're going to shut down FeedBurner, they'll give people plenty of heads up. But it can be very ugly to move in an emergency situation, which I hope no one ever has to get into. All right, Amazon is set to announce 2 Kindle Fires. And basically, there's rumors swirling that the new Kindle Fire that may be coming out will be a surrounded 10-inch of the tablet to complement the current 7-inch. But CNET's reporting that there'll be 2 Kindle Fires. Both will be 7-inch varieties. Two tablets the same size may sound strange at first, but it all depends on what's going to be in the model and what's going to be available, if there's going to be a camera, more memory, HDMI port, and so forth. But there's no pricing yet, but they're saying it could be as low as $149 to undercut the Nexus 7. So we'll see what's going to be coming online. It's going to be announced this week. But even Geek News Central, we're getting into a little bit of rumor mongering. So that was an article that was written by Alan. Thanks for the link on that. Also, if you are watching the Olympics via an app, don't delete that app yet. More live sports are coming, and primarily NFL football. Get ready to experience more than 400 events live with NBC Sports Live Extra. So that's pretty cool. They're going to be putting up the golf channel and a variety of stuff. Now, you're still going to have to authenticate, meaning that you must prove that you subscribe to cable or a satellite package that provides those channels. And the app isn't completely useless. In fact, we'll be far from it. But the services are eventually going to have to break away from traditional models, as we all know. So we'll see what comes with this and what you're actually going to have access to via the NBC Sports Live Extra app. And I'm not expecting too much, to be honest with you myself. How many of you have multiple i devices in your home? How many of you have a couple of iCloud accounts? Well, how many of you know how to sync calendars? So if you update one thing on your calendar, your wife or kids can see it as well. Well, there's some iCloud 101s knowing how to configure your family's calendar. And this is pretty cool. You can shows you how to create one family calendar account and how you all can basically get access to it. And simply by adding more iCloud accounts. So anyway, I have a link up in the show notes on how you can do this. And it solved a little problem we were having here. So I was happy to read this one today. So definitely check that out if you want to be able to have a solitary schedule that you both your wife and you can use. I think that's really important. It's good for my wife to know exactly what my schedule is and vice versa, because we're always on the go right now. And things have been pretty crazy around here. All right. Apparently, there's a new Windows 8 companion app for the Windows Phone. And The Verge has gotten pictures of this. And a lot of speculations going on here. We know that Microsoft has been retiring a number of its Zune desktop app feature in preparation of the upcoming switch to Xbox Music. And the application is a Metro-style one that will be available from the Windows Store. It's designed to replace the Zune client for Windows 8 users. And the app will be automatically installed for Windows Phone 8 users on a Windows 8 PC when the device is connected. Windows 7 users will be directed to equivalent desktop app to manage the device. The application will be likely branded as a companion app. It's going to provide quick access to photos, documents, music, and video on Windows Phone devices. allowing the users to import export data to the handset, which is smart. So a little play out of the playbook from Apple here by Microsoft by making available a companion app for Windows 8 and the Windows Phone. All right, Windows 7 has overtaken Windows XP in market share, and Mac OS 10 has overtaken Windows Vista. Currently, Mac is showing 7.13% market share, Linux at 1.10. Windows is still king at 91.77%, broken down with Windows 7 having 42.72%, Windows Vista 6.15%, and Windows XP still hanging in there at 42.52%, which is pretty crazy if you think about where we're at, how long Windows XP has been on and available. The leading up to the Democratic National Convention, the Democratic National Committee has released a voter registration app, including the open source version. Basically, you can put this on your website, whether you are a conservative or a either a Republican or a Democrat or independent. They've also released the source code to this as well. It's built in Ruby on Rails. It was posted on GitHub. And it is kind of interesting, though, because you put this widget on there and you did design the width, the height, the background image, the color, whether you want padding, if you want darker text or lighter text, you put your site URL, your email, and it comes up. It says register to vote. First name, last name, email, phone, zip code, and at the bottom it says paid for by Obama for America. So pretty smart on the Obama campaign for making available this tool to get people registered to vote. So that's kind of interesting that they've done this. And I agree. We should have more people that are out voting. Makes you wonder why no one on the Republican side thought this up, huh? Just goes to show you that I think they're still a little behind when it comes to digital media. That's for sure. If you are going to a restaurant and you do a review and you give them a negative review or a positive review, what they're saying is that the reviews, any movement on a star status on a review, any can move from 1 point to a half a point or 1 star to a half star increase, really results in a huge difference in the amount of bookings from 7 p.m. on for most restaurants. And they're saying that an extra half star rating caused a restaurant's 7 p.m. bookings to sell out on from 30 to 49% of the evenings it was open for business. So this is pretty big. Restaurants that get good reviews are having, doing bang up business. But if you are a restaurant that's ending up with the 1 and 2 stars, you may find your number of people visiting your establishment going down for more than one reason. But pretty interesting to see what's going on here on star ratings. All right, the first dedicated app.net clinic for iOS has hit the App Store. So this is pretty good. App.net Rhino is a collaboration between two Croatian companies, Planet 1107 and TwinkleTap, who took on design duties. So it's not the first iOS app to support App.net, but it is the first to be on the in the App Store. So you can grab it. And of course, I'm an app.net supporter. And for all the reasons we've talked about in the past. Here's a backup to, we talked about after the Samsung Apple verdict that Robert Scoble said, hey, you know, Samsung has basically got themselves to be the one of the top mobile companies for a billion, $1.05 billion in damages. And, you know, I didn't get any real feedback from all of you on this. But in Korea, they're basically saying, hey, look what happened to companies like Nokia, Motorola, and BlackBerry, which didn't do as Samsung did. This analyst named Mr. Song added, referred to the competitors whose failures to adapt quickly to the smartphone boom driven by iPhones may lack in innovation, but right now no one can beat Sony in the playing catch-up game. So, you know, they're going to have some issues with some phones being available, but they definitely rolled the dice and lost, but they've won probably in the long run. All right, next time you go to Walmart, Walmart's testing an iPhone app for scanning purchases. The app's going to allow users to scan merchandise while they shop in the aisles instead of having them all scanned at one time at checkout. This is a new mobile payment system that will allow shoppers to use their iPhone to scan purchases. The system is currently unavailable to customers. They're doing it with employees only. You know, sometimes I get pissed. I go to these stores and there's like a dozen self-checkout places and then like one or two tellers. And then a lady standing there monitoring everyone as you're self-checking out. If you got one or two items, it's convenient. But if you got a grocery cart full of stuff, it drives me nuts. It really, really does. But that's the life we live right now, folks. Well, apparently, a Facebook troll who has been recently arrested was basically a UK policeman. And this guy was being pretty nasty online to the point where he was actually arrested for, the attacks he was making. And I don't know all what he did, but he was, as a police officer. So what do you do when it's the police that are, being the troll? It's kind of like, wow. So basically, the police are investigating whether this guy's account was illegally accessed by attackers. But, as he's claiming, but as of right now, he's in the slammer. Questions being asked, do we need a longer school year? Well, here in Hawaii, we have a longer school year. It's good and bad. I'd love to hear what you guys' thoughts are. Your kids are going back to school tomorrow for most of you in the United States. What do you guys think? Would you prefer the school year to be longer? Or do you think the kids need a break? Love to hear your feedback. Geeknews@gmail.com. Hey, of course, on tonight's content, anything I covered, we'd love to hear from you. Drop an email to us. It's much appreciated. It really is. Hey, and knocking infected PCs off the internet. There's been questions asked now. If a computer is detected to have malware and is doing something it shouldn't on an ISP service, should the internet service provider lock them out? And, so what do you guys think on that one, too? I think it's a good idea. If nothing else, helps them get help, And maybe they unlock them to, go download the stuff they need to get. But, there's a lot of computers out there doing some bad things. And the sooner we get them off the net, I think the better. Over on nakedsecurity.sophos.com, the attacks on Java security hole has been hidden in a Microsoft service agreement email. So if you're getting any MSAs from Microsoft, please delete those. And it's a phishing email. It replaces the link in the original message with malicious links that send you to a website and install a new variant of the Zeus malware. And this has been on the street for a couple of days, so be careful out there, okay? All right, how many of you have little cans and stuff you put money in? One thing I like about the cans that you can buy that I found in Japan, at least, these basically they're metal cans about that big. They got, the slot in the top where you put your quarters, your dimes, your nickels in. And it's not open. You can't open it. You have to have a can opener to open the can. So it's one of those things where you put the money in, you're really going to have to want to get into it to open it. It's not something that's easy to get into. And, what we've done, we've had those in the past and we get them full and then we take them to the bank and we make a deposit. But how many of you would like one of these financial crisis survival kit cans? They're about $11. And the cans that they have here aren't very big. But you can look for these types of saving cans all over the place. Some of them are bigger than others. The ones we've had are about the size of the size of a milk jug. They're metal. You can't see inside them. You can't tell what's in there. But they sure get heavy when they're full. So if you want one of these, you can do it. And this one opens up a little pop top. It makes it a little too easy to get in. The ones that we've had, you actually needed a can opener to open up. They weren't opening without the can opener. And definitely obvious that it's been tampered with. I don't know if I was looking at another set of things that may you want to go into your travel toolkit, but I saw this. It would almost look like a weapon, but this is from Boleto. It's a folding culinary set, makes fine dining on the go possible. It's a little kit that unfolds. You got a spoon, or actually a spork, with a can opener attached to it, And then you've got a knife, so you can cut the stuff that's basically you hold with your spork. But anyway, by Boleto. And it's available for $49. Folds up in a nice little package where you're not going to get cut. But this knife looks pretty wicked. It really does. So anyway, I'll have the link. And it is, yes, it is a locking knife, so you don't have to worry about it twisting on you. Okay, last couple of articles here. Got some kids going back to school. Well, of course, the folks over at hackcollege.com has come out with some harmless and funny dorm pranks. And I have the very first one on the list. You tape a air horn to basically the door stopper. And as people open the door, they, of course, that makes a nice little sound in the hallway. Of course, they've got all kinds of balloon pranks and lock people into their arms. And there's talking about putting socks on friends' doors. And you know, just some fun stuff kids can do. So nothing too harmless here. Harmful, I should say. So anyway, I have that link up in the show notes. This last article, I'm just going to link up to the show notes. It talks about attack of the customer. And this was a review of what started back in 2010. It was the Pampers Dry Max crisis. And this is a great article that talks about the power of consumers and things that happen and the ganging up on a company based on a product gone bad in the eye of the consumer. And it shows what the company did, what they didn't do. So if any of you are out there getting ready to introduce a product or getting ready to change a product in your business sphere, you'll definitely want to read The Attack of the Customers, The Pampers Dry Max Crisis. I'll have that link up in the show notes for you to overview. All right, I did get some emails in from the last show. And let me look at the date here. Today is the 3rd of September. Last show was on the 30th of August. So let me go down here. I got an email from Winnie. He said, "Hey, Todd, love the show. Has there been a problem with the audio levels in recent shows? With all audio controls at max, I'm only getting a whisper of sound. Is anyone else having issues with audio levels? If you had, email me. I thought we were being pretty good recently. I didn't know there was an issue." And Winnie, let me know which show you had problems with. Please email. Hey, got an email from Scott. And Scott, good luck. Thanks for saving a lot of money by using my Geek5 code at GoDaddy. I definitely appreciate it. And of course, Scott's a good friend of mine. Thanks, Scott. And we look forward to seeing you out at CES. Got an email from Tim. He says, "Hey, Todd, the heated debate for religious ownership of internet domains. Will Catholics own .Catholic or will a .Bible manufacturer be able to own that Bible?" So there's a good article on that. Of course, got a few emails on the arrest of the Pirate Bay, one of the Pirate Bay founders. I got an email here from Dave. He said, "Hey, Todd, I'm an avid listener to the show out of Wisconsin." He says, "I plan on attending CES this year for work and wondering if Raw Voice was doing any events or were you going to have a get together while in town? We normally do not have time to do get togethers. Just because we're busy, but we are going to have the live broadcast booth. We've been told we're going to be outside of North Hall, which is pretty cool. It's a great location. So, Dave, definitely be in town. So you have to send me the details on what booth and what company you're in, and we'll have to stop by and see and cover your company." Got an email from Jeffrey. Jeffrey Ramsey, one of our longtime listeners. "Todd, if you don't want me doing these things, please tell me. Or I'll assume if no one tags or comments, it's understood. Social media at this level is amazing and new things happen to see if they help or work. It's a business or pleasure." Basically, Jeffrey was promoting some of my promo codes on Flipboard. And thanks for sharing those codes, Jeffrey. We definitely appreciate it. And feel free to share my new codes this month. It's greatly appreciated when you guys do that. Got an email here from Tim. He says, "Hey, the ever so glorious moment has arrived. It's almost September 15th when our online purchases in California can finally be taxed so that the public sector unions can have more money. Everything is expensive out here and a lot of services many people might use free elsewhere cost lots of money, like having the fire department respond. I still wonder where all that tax money goes. I wish Amazon would have done a little more to fight this. I really do. But I guess they had their reasons. I think Amazon remained popular. But nonetheless, this is going to hurt them a little in California sales, in my opinion. This is about sales tax, internet sales tax going live in California, where every purchase Californians make will be charged sales tax online or in a store. Got an email from Ram. He said, "Hey, Todd, here comes the sun. Astonishing whip, 500,000 miles long, spotted on the solar surface. And scientists say radiation from it is heading for Earth." So he gives me a link to an article over at dailymail.co.uk. And also got an email from Rick. He says, "Hey, Todd, I thought you might be interested in this item for your next show," talking about the Hugo Awards and how the robot killed the Hugo Awards. He says, "This is an example of DMC preemptive takedown in action, Rick." And I agree, Rick, absolutely. And thanks for your feedback on that. I had gotten that link earlier today as well, but thanks for the for covering my six as well on that. But definitely check Rick's show out. He does the Force Field podcast for IT service professionals over at theforcefield.net. All right, folks, that's going to wrap me up here for tonight. Not bad on time on the show. As always, a little bit, not a super great show tonight, I don't think. I prejudge myself too often, but destroying names and getting stories mixed up. So I apologize. Hey, anyway, again, thanks for hanging out here. My name's Todd Cochran. Email me here at Twitter at Geek News or email me at geeknews@gmail.com. Feel free to use the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. It's been my pleasure to bring you the show, and we look forward to seeing you back here on Thursday. Everyone take care. We'll see you next time, and aloha.